I'm Tom Hall. Glad you could join us for Midday. Every scientific advancement comes with a slew of questions. Take autonomous cars, for example. In an accident, whose lives should a driverless vehicle be programmed to protect? People in the car or people on the street? Or treating gunshot victims by nearly freezing them gives surgeons more time to stitch them up, but is it human experimentation without consent? Is that ever okay? Dr. Jeffrey Kahn frames these kinds of questions and looks for answers. He's the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics, and he joins me today for a conversation about some of the thorny ethical issues that we face in this ever-changing modern world. Plus, theater critic J. Wynn Russick reviews Les Liaisons Dangereuses at Baltimore's Center Stage. Midday gets underway right after the news. And welcome, everybody, to Midday on this Arctic version of our show today. Temperatures in the 20s and windy out there, so be careful. We got maybe some rotten weather on the way tomorrow night. We'll just have to see how that develops. Dr. Jeffrey Kahn joins me again today. He is the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. He stops by the program from time to time to talk about how ethicists help us frame the questions that we need to ask when we are confronted with new research possibilities or new advances in science and technology. It can be quite a sticky wicket sometimes. Jeff, it's good to see you.
Good to be with you.
So one of the things we want to talk about today is autonomous cars, self-driving cars. And, you know, on the surface, you think, well, this is just some technical thing. You know, Google and Apple and Tesla and these other companies are developing. But there are a horde of ethical dilemmas that these cars present us, not the least of which is, if they're in an accident, can they be programmed one way or the other to protect the people who are in the car at the expense of people who may be on the street or people in other cars? And that's really wild. I mean, how are people thinking about that these days?
It's a really interesting time, and the news even in the last couple of days has been about Google spinning off the autonomous car division to its own company as a kind of harbinger of it being nearly ready for prime time. So we're really entering into a phase where these things may end up being on the streets. And the questions then start to be about, well, they have to be programmed, right? They're autonomous, but only because humans have written code to tell them what to do when certain choices have to be made. So it turns out this is a philosophy problem. And in fact, when I was an undergraduate in college, and in fact, when I teach undergraduates, we introduce something called the trolley problem. It's a quite famous philosophy puzzle, which is about a trolley.
The trolley problem.
The trolley problem. And listeners can go on the internet and just put in those words in your search engine, and you'll find lots of videos, lectures, some famous ones, actually. Michael Sandel at Harvard is probably the most watched person talking about this. But it's a longstanding problem, predates him and my time in philosophy, which is about a trolley heading down the track. And there's a trolley driver who sees ahead of the trolley two people on the track and realizes that if the trolley continues on its track, it will not only run over those two people but kill them. However, there's a spur that the trolley can also take off to the right, say, and on that spur is just one other person. And so the trolley driver, the question to the students and to all of us in philosophy is whether the trolley driver ought to allow the trolley to continue on its path, knowing that it will kill two, or should he pull the lever that will allow the trolley to go off on the spur, knowing that it will kill one, which has a feature, right, of this question. So it's a kind of utilitarian question. Is it better to kill one versus two?
You know, the lesser of two evils.
The lesser of two evils. However, when you present this to a class of students, they'll think hard about it because one is allowing the trolley on its way, so non-interference with the trolley as it would continue, versus doing something, the pulling of the lever, which would then cause the trolley to go off onto the spur. So the action that kills one somehow troubles people more than allowing the trolley to go forward on its original path, even though that would result in a greater number of people dying.
So how is non-interference then a... I mean, that's interesting. So non-interference is just is better in some ways
in
some
people's minds. So mm-hmm. it, as a matter of sort of responsibility, philosophy, the way we think about it as a matter of morality, of ethics, there really is no distinction. So this is one of these lessons about why is that a harder case for you than my saying there are two people, you know, in an emergency room. We could kill one to take the organs and save lots of people. Why don't we do that? We don't sacrifice one to save many when given that choice. So why is that a harder choice to make in the context of the trolley problem? So it's a way of getting people to think about really what's at stake in moral decision making. All right, so how does this connect up? So this is a hypothetical thought experiment that we have used for a long time in the introducing moral philosophy. So it turns out this is the question for autonomous vehicles, right? So if they're driving down the road, they have to make a decision, or a decision has to be made that a human programs into them. If there's a person standing in the crosswalk and the only choices are between running that person over in the crosswalk or taking a turn such that a dog would die, right, or another car would be hit, what should the car do? Now, we face this as humans all the time, and we slam on the brakes and hope nothing bad happens, but we have an opportunity to actually try to figure out what the right answer is. It's like the trolley problem brought to life, right? Yeah. And so the people who are working with...
Because a human controlling the car is going to make a split-second decision.
And probably not one that's reflective of this kind of deep moral thinking,
yeah,
right?
The computer is going to think deeply and morally, right?
And quickly.
And quickly.
So that's the difference, right? It can be programmed to try to answer this question. So okay, this is a well-known problem, and people working with autonomous vehicles have been talking about this for a long time and programming cars. The latest iteration of this is a series of studies that were just published, and actually in Science, the most prestigious science journal in the world. Science and Nature are the two most prestigious. In Science, there was a report of some research done using Mechanical Turk, which is Amazon's very large number of people who are willing to do research studies online for very small amounts of money. So using lots of people, asking them a kind of similar question, which was, if a car has to be programmed to make a decision about what to do when it's about to get into an accident, should it, one, do the more utilitarian thing, save the most people, that is, kill the fewest, right, injure the fewest, or should it save the people who are in the car, right? Yeah. So should it do what seems to be the best for the most people, that's a utilitarian, the greatest good for the greatest number, or should it save the occupants of the car that the car is carrying? Right. So what's more important? And the vast majority of people in the context of that question say it should be programmed to kill the fewest people, save the most people. They should do the right thing for the public good. But then when asked, well, which car would you want? What would you want your car to do? The vast majority of people say, I want the car to save the occupants. I want to be saved.
I want to buy a car that's going to save me if I'm in an accident.
Exactly. So that's no.
Now, what? And this assumes, for example, that the computers in these cars would be able to figure out if you're the sole driver, the sole occupant of a driverless vehicle, and the option is saving that vehicle or smashing into five people on the street, the computer can make that computation and say, oh, there's five versus one.
Sure.
We'll go with the one. So in that case, they save the one, right?
Correct.
But if there's six, there's all these different variations. If there's more in the car than on the street, you know, who do you hit?
These are all empirical questions. Now, you know, sensors can be built into cars to know how many passengers there are, and frankly, whether it's a child or an adult, by the weight. I mean, all sorts of things that cars will easily know. And so that all gets factored into the algorithms that are written. So this is all about programming. So the question is, how should the cars be programmed? And so some of car manufacturers have been asking the customers who will buy their cars, what do you want in the car that we're going to sell you? I mean, it isn't so much about, well, should Ford or Chevrolet or Mercedes or BMW, you know, tell us what the answer is. We're the humans. We're the ones who should decide what we want. The problem is what we want for other people is different than what we want for ourselves. This is known as the tragedy of the commons. Of course, I want the planet to be saved by burning less fossil fuel, if that's what it means. But I myself don't want to drive less and use less gasoline. So I want what's good for the planet for other people, but not in the way I act. And it's exactly played out in this research.
Dr. Jeffrey Kahn is the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. We would love to hear from you about what you think about this interesting dilemma, the trolley problem, as it applies to these autonomous vehicles that are on the way. I mean, everybody just says that they are gonna happen, and there's all sorts of advantages that people cite about them. You know, we're gonna have fewer traffic jams, and we're gonna have fewer accidents. So supposedly, we're gonna have fewer instances where anybody is hurt because the computers are gonna be smarter drivers than any of us. Give us a call at 410-662-8780. Our email address, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle if you want to drop us a tweet at @midday_TomHall. So, Jeff, there have been some accidents already involving autonomous cars. There was a Tesla vehicle that was driven by a gentleman named Joshua Brown. He was driving in Florida, and it was on autopilot mode, and a large truck evidently came onto the street from a cross street, and the sky was bright. It's Florida, very sunny, and the truck was white. So evidently, the self-driving system couldn't distinguish between Florida air and a white truck. So the system did not apply the brakes. There was a crash, and Mr. Brown was tragically killed. Now, Tesla says that Mr. Brown was somewhat at fault in this. He should have been paying attention. These autopilot car modes that cars can be on still require you, or they suggest that you put your hands on the wheel and you actually drive the car. So Mr. Brown perhaps was just having the car drive itself while he was, I don't know, doing something else. So there's that moral dilemma too. If you're the owner of one of these things and you're driving it, what's your responsibility? I mean, do you forego all of your responsibility and just let the computer take care of it? What do you do with the findings that people say, all right, I want a car that protects me and chooses me over the people who may be on the street if I'm about to hit them. Although most people understand you would want to inflict the least amount of tragedy that you could. Yeah. When you know that, what do you make of that?
Well, yeah, the problem is if everybody bought the cars that they say they want, we wouldn't have cars that then did what was in the public good. The cars would do what was in the owner's good, and that's the problem. So we need to, as a matter of policy, figure out the answer to that question. One answer to the problem that you articulated through the case in Florida, the Tesla that crashed, is that cars will be soon able to talk to each other, not really talk, communicate with each other. So there'll be ways that the computers in autonomous cars will interact such that the truck in the road ahead of the Tesla would somehow send out a signal such that the Tesla would realize that was in fact the back end of a semi and not Florida air, as you put it. So there is a technology fix coming. So part of the problem is the autonomous, semi-autonomous Teslas are not yet ready to be left hands off the wheel, right, which is the point that you made. They're showing kind of proof of principle, but everything that they say is don't do other things while the car is going. Don't do what this guy did, effectively. Then we get into questions about, well, what happens when there is a crash? Who's responsible? What do we do about insurance, right? There's this whole thing about liability. So is the individual responsible? If you're driving an autonomous car, who's at fault if there is a crash? And if it's between two autonomous cars, it's probably a different answer than if it's an autonomous car with a human-driven car. And so all of that's going to have to be worked out as a matter of policy and law. We need the rules to figure out, you know, what the right way to behave is as technology proceeds. And we're in the midst of that. It's really interesting. It's a little messy, but it's really interesting.
Yeah, it sure is interesting. And it is going to be really messy, I think. Let's grab one call before we take a break. Joshua in Baltimore, welcome to Midday with Dr. Jeffrey Kahn.
All right. Thank you for having me. I just had a brief idea. I guess if you gave the drivers the option when they purchased the vehicle on what they would prefer the vehicle to do in said cases, I guess right now, with the wheel in your hands, you have that option to figure who's gonna live and die. So, you know, why not give the buyer the option at the beginning, or make it like an airbag switch or something you can turn on and off?
That's a really interesting idea, Joshua. I mean, you know, you load the car with certain things, including a computer that says, I'm going to either save me or I'm going to save the most amount of people possible. That's wild.
Yeah, we want to wonder whether it should be an option. So among the things that we hope will come is that it will be safer. You said, Tom, in one of your sort of setups, is that we're heading towards a time when it will be safer to drive because the humans are not the drivers. There's a machine that's driving for us. And so when that day comes, and we'll have to figure out what the criteria would be for saying that day had come, will we actually let people, humans, drive? Or will we say, you're breaking a law, right? You don't have the option to drive yourself, right? Because you're not as good at this as the machines that we have programmed. And you're creating a hazard by trying to drive yourself. There are films that actually show this as an example. iRobot, the Will Smith film. Uh-huh. There was a scene in that film where the cars are driving really fast because they're all autonomously driven, and he takes the controls and creates all sorts of problems because he doesn't drive as well as the machine would drive.
That's wild. I mean, I could just see it. Joshua, thank you for your call. Really appreciate your joining us here on Midday. I mean, I can see folks walking into the Ford dealership say, well, I'd like the sunroof, I'd like the heated seats, and the vehicular manslaughter package. That's right. Perfect. Just what we need. All right. Dr. Jeffrey Kahn is the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. And by the way, you were recently elected to the National Academy of Medicine. That's a peer-elected organization that advises the nation on medical and health issues. Congratulations. That's a big darn deal, isn't it?
Thank you. Thank you for noticing that.
Good stuff. All right. You are welcome to join Dr. Jeffrey Kahn when we come back from a break. 410-662-8780 here on Midday. Our email, midday@wipr.org, and our Twitter handle, @MiddayTomHall. More on bioethics and ethics in general when we come back. Stick around.
You're listening to Midday here on your NPR news station, member supported 88.1 WYPR.
And welcome back to Midday, everybody. I'm Tom Hall. Glad you're with us. By the way, coming up on the broadcast tomorrow, Helicon joins me here in Studio A, playing their unique brand of Celtic and world music. Helicon fans know that for the past 30-plus years, the band has given a couple of very popular December concerts that celebrate the winter solstice, which happens next Wednesday. They will stop by Midday tomorrow to play some tunes and take your calls and questions. Their concert is Saturday. The solstice takes place on Wednesday. We want to be clear about that. That's all coming up on Midday Friday. And coming up later today, theater critic Jay Wynn Russick will stop by to review the latest offering at Center Stage, Les Liaisons Dangereuses. If you've just joined us today, my guest is Dr. Jeffrey Kahn, the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. We're talking about some of the dangerous liaisons between science and ethics, the moral and ethical considerations that we've got to grapple with when it comes to some of the new scientific and technological advancements that our modern world affords us, like self-driving cars. Got a bunch of folks want to weigh in on this. Jeff, let me go to the phones again. Ellicott City. Kevin, you're calling from Ellicott City. Welcome to Midday with Dr. Jeffrey Kahn.
Thank you very much for taking my call. My question is if the ethicist has found any difference in studies or your personal research with regards to kind of the common man and how they respond to those questions and people with a more spiritual background, be it, you know, priests, rabbis, imams, or people who, you know, meditate and you know, consider themselves a more spiritual person, if there's a difference in their answers between those two sexes of people.
Interesting. I mean, have there been? I'd be surprised if there were that separated subsets of religious people, so-called, versus non-religious people.
Well, right, or maybe different people have different kinds of value commitments. Is another way to ask Kevin's question. I don't know of any such research. I'll go and look. I think this area of research is at its very early stages, but there are people who are trying to sort this out, because obviously there are very significant policy implications for what we ought to do. I mean, it's interesting academically, but it's also about a decision that has to be made, right? We need to program these things. what should we do? And if the answer is some people can choose one and other people can choose another, I'm not quite sure that's where we want to end up. But that's part of what the discussion needs to include.
Is there a venue? Is there a way for the public to weigh in on this that you know of? I mean, what would be the best way for people to make their feelings known?
That's a great question, too. You know, part of what is happening is the rules are being crafted by the regulators that need to weigh in. So this happened with drones, so flying vehicles, right, where the FAA had to make up new rules for what can and can't happen in terms of traffic and drones, how high, where they can fly, where they can't fly. So the same things are going to happen for autonomous vehicles that will be on the road. So Department of Transportation, and then there'll be states and localities that will have to make rules about that too. So I think it will come to a point where city councils will need to actually have public input about whether we want autonomous vehicles and what rules there ought to be. And then the feds will have public comment. That's all available via online and weighing in through public comment processes, which are well known.
Yeah, we have a few listeners who have some ideas. John in Towson, welcome to Midday, talking about autonomous cars with Dr. Jeffrey Kahn from the Bioethics Institute at Hopkins.
Yes, hi. Thanks for taking my call. I don't think this is an ethical issue at all, really. I think we need to think in terms of how, and I go back to your comment just a minute ago about the rules. I think we need some kind of dedicated lanes, like HOV lanes or dedicated street lanes, to keep autonomous cars away from people who away from cars that are driven by people, just to keep that separation and you know, let the technology do its thing. Right now, there's too much of a differential between autonomous cars and self-driven cars because, you know, the same way you get into accidents because of speed differentials. I'll take my comment off here.
All right. Well, thanks for your call, John. Well, that's one of the rules, perhaps, that the feds and local officials can think about. I mean, we have HOV lanes now, you know, high occupancy vehicle lanes with three or four people to give them an incentive to carpool and to be with others and not drive themselves. That's an environmental thing. Maybe people will have an incentive if it turns out that the driverless vehicle lanes, if there are such things, if they end up moving faster and getting you there quicker, maybe that'll become an incentive. Interesting.
Yeah. I think it's clearly that's among the kinds of rules that we would want to think about. How do we separate these cars that are being driven autonomously from humans, whether they're in cars or not in cars, but there's likely to be points at which that will inevitably happen. There will be this intersection of machines and people. And we need to figure out what to do when that happens. What ought the rules to be? Or when a dog runs across the HOV lane, should the vehicle just ignore that? Or should it stop? And if it stops, how do the other autonomous vehicles know that they need to stop as well? So I think we can't get away from some of these truly ethics questions.
Katil from calling us from Johns Hopkins University. Welcome to Midday.
Thank you very much for taking my call. So I have a general question about the idea of safety ratings in cars. And when we buy a car, we assume that the safety ratings protect the passengers. And so as you know, you mentioned the tragedy of the commons. So if the idea of a car is to protect the safety of the passengers, why is there at all an issue about whether or not the car should protect the safety of the people around it? Because the point of purchasing a car for that consumer is to primarily protect the people within it. So should there at all be a discussion about whether a car should save the people around it when the primary purchase for the primary purpose for the consumer is to save the passengers within it?
Well, that's an interesting question. Of course, you know,
we
have just, you know, there are several car companies that use as their point of sale how safe they're going to keep you. You know, we all remember Donald Sutherland, you know, Volvo, drive safely. You know, Subaru has a series of ads where, you know, the kid gets in an accident and the kid's fine and the parent says, oh, I don't care that you totaled the car as long as you're fine. Maybe this technology is simply forcing us to expand this question. This is a question we've never even had to ask before.
I think that's exactly right. So you're of course right that safety features in cars are to protect the people in them. It's also to protect the people who may be in an accident, right, with that car. We try to build cars so that they crumple in certain ways and airbags, expand inside the car. So it's primarily to protect the passengers, but not exclusively. And now that we're in a situation where we have to think more broadly, as you just said, Tom, it's an interesting conversation we probably didn't have to have before, but now we do. Now, I would say we do make laws that are about public safety, like you need to stop at a red light, right? And in many states, you have to stop at a crosswalk if there's a person standing there. That's a law, right? And you're supposed to only go up to a speed limit, which is about not only safety of the people in the car, but the safety of the people around where the cars are. So I'm not sure it's 100% the case that we only make rules related to cars to protect the people who are the occupants.
Yeah, interesting. And speaking of legislation, as we understand it, Nevada was the first state to authorize the use of autonomous vehicles. They did it 5 years ago, back in 2011. But it's very fuzzy in most other places. There are even some states who have legislatively prohibited research into the issues that we're asking about. They don't even want to think about it. So the legislative dimension of this is a very new thing.
Well,
people are starting to grapple with it and trying to stick their head in the sand on a couple of instances.
Right, and then there are cities like Pittsburgh, which has welcomed Uber, and there's an autonomous fleet of Uber cars that have been trialed. It's really
right.
the pilot has been in Pittsburgh because Pittsburgh has welcomed them. So there's and the mayor has really been in the lead about how to think about these issues. So it's really interesting, right? It's the laboratory of experimentation at the local and state level, which is a feature of our democracy.
Lots of folks want to weigh in on this. Bill in Hanover, welcome to Midday. Glad you called.
Oh, thanks. So I'm wondering if there's a third option, in addition to protecting the occupants, protecting, the most number of people, that might have to do with people being in the right place or the wrong place. So if a car swerves to avoid someone, would they protect someone that's on a sidewalk or a crosswalk as opposed to someone that's jaywalking? I'm thinking that the trolley driver could make that decision, very utilitarian, right? To make the decision to protect the person on the spur because they're not in the wrong place.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. And that's among the way the trolley problem gets sort of made more nuanced. So what if the spur had a mother pushing a stroller with a baby in it, and the main track had three workmen who worked for the company that ran the trolleys? They were track workers, right? So it does the role that the individuals who might be saved or die matter to how you think about this problem. So now we get into much more interesting and nuanced discussion. So how do we program that in when you need to think about the responsibility that the individual who may be saved or harmed has for being in the right or the wrong place?
Wow.
Yeah, but
talk about profiling.
But really,
the car comes up and says, well, you're 6 years old, you have a full life ahead of you, so I'm going to kill the 80-year-old instead of you.
Yeah, and so some of these things can be programmed, right, such that, and the great thing about machines and their ability to learn and algorithms is they don't take time. It's quick. The problem is you have to be pretty confident in the information that's being fed in, right? Are you sure that the person who's in the wrong place is really there because of their own fault or for some other reason?
Yeah. Jack in Whiteford, welcome to Midday with Dr. Jeffrey Kahn. Thanks for your call.
Hi. So I was thinking about this problem, and it occurred to me that if more people die, it will probably cost more money for people to respond. You got EMTs, if there are injuries, that kind of thing, police officers. So that's man hours. And also, if more people die, that's more people in mourning afterwards. So I think it's a lot bigger, because of how it affects other people other than just the people that die.
But and there's even an economic impact if more people die than fewer. Of course, economics is going to going to dictate a lot of this in terms of the kinds of cars we have, what features they have, what they're able to do, how much they cost, et cetera.
And these are conversations that we would be having if it weren't about autonomous cars and what the rules should be, but rather whether people should be required to wear seatbelts or whether people who ride motorcycles should be required to wear helmets. So,
and of course, those, you know, that's an example. They are required in certain states and not required in other states.
And,
so states are going to have different rules.
And there's
too.
Really interesting evidence about what happens in the states that do versus don't. So more people die when you don't have motorcycle helmet laws, predictably, but there are more organ donors in states that do have motorcycle helmet laws. So people are badly injured, but they don't die on the scene. They die when they go to the hospital, and then they can be organ donors. So, you know, there are costs and savings. I mean, there are all sorts of ways to think about this from an economic versus a social policy perspective versus from a public health perspective. And we do think about all of these questions as we think about what rules ought to be applied. And so, in a way, we've talked that through before, but now we're applying it, or should be thinking about applying it, to these autonomous vehicles as well. And then the new issues that arise in these opportunities because of technology.
If you've just joined us, it's Midday here on 88.1. I'm Tom Hall. My guest today, Dr. Jeffrey Kahn. He joins us from time to time to talk about issues in bioethics. He's the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics. And we have Andy on the line from Sparks. Andy, welcome to Midday. Glad you called.
Hi. I happen to be an AI scientist, and I think an interesting thing I'd like Professor Kahn to comment on is the issue that it really is a probabilistic reasoning problem. I'll try to keep it simple by just giving an example. The car will be in a position of having to decide whether it should veer to the right because there's a 1 in a million chance of hitting a jaywalker, or veering to the left and with a 70% probability that it's going to do $1 million worth of property damage but not kill anybody. I thought you might want to comment on that.
Yeah, great. So maybe just for listeners, AI is artificial intelligence. So here's somebody who actually knows from where they speak in relation to these kinds of questions. How do we program in an artificial intelligence environment what to do in situations like this? So you've introduced not only the notion of property versus human harm, but how great a likelihood of each, right? And so, again, we have to be thinking through what we want the answer to be. So it's a human decision about what we want machines to do. We shouldn't leave it for machines to decide these things. We should answer that question, right? At what proportion of probability of property damage do we say it's sufficient to say we'll take a 1 in whatever the denominator is chance of causing human harm? Maybe the answer is none. It doesn't matter, right? 1 in a very large denominator, it doesn't matter. We don't want to harm humans. We'd much rather cause property damage. And that's a policy decision. I would think my argument would be we should think that way, save humans at whatever cost of property there might be, no matter how small the risk, although 1 in a very large number, maybe we don't have to think that way. I don't know what the right denominator is, however.
And you raise an interesting thing, that we as humans should be making these decisions instead of the machines. Those who say, maybe not, maybe the machines should make the decision, and the reason is they are dispassionate about it. They will be able to calculate to the nth degree in a way that we can't the sort of impact on the public good.
But we have to tell the machines what the rules ought to be, right? So machines can't reason the way we can. They can only apply the rules that we tell them to apply. Right. Although we now start to get into what artificial intelligence means, and at what point do autonomous beings or robots start to think like we do. And maybe that's a different show.
Yeah, I bet it
is.
But
a really interesting conversation,
yeah,
too.
Yeah, very indeed. Ed in Lutherville, welcome to Midday with Dr. Jeff Kahn.
Hello, gentlemen. I'm a truck safety advocate. My wife was killed 6 years ago by a trucker who fell asleep at the wheel, and my son has been permanently disabled. I am a huge fan of the idea of autonomous cars. I would rather know that all of the cars are programmed the same way. After a good long discussion with ethicists and engineers and the public, I would rather know that that car is really probably going to do what I think it's going to do, whereas I drive down the road, I have no idea what the people in front of me are going to do, the people behind me. So I think that we are on the edge of a revolution that's going to really, really change lives and reduce deaths and reduce injuries dramatically. It would also give my disabled son the ability to drive someplace by himself, which he'll never be able to do in a manually operated vehicle. So that's my comment.
Well,
Ed,
thank you very much for your call, and we are very sorry for your loss. And Ed brings up an excellent point. This is one of the many things that advocates of driverless vehicles state. People who are not currently able to drive themselves will be able now to have much more mobility. There's an environmental impact. Less gas will be used, less carbon in the air. I mean, there are lots of upsides to these things,
oh, sure.
As scary as they are.
No, Ed makes a very good point, and as Tom said, really sorry to hear about your loss. The gains to be made in safety, I think, are clear. We all can see where this is heading. And so I guess maybe it's important to step back and say, we can make driving much, much safer through these technologies. The kinds of questions we're asking are the sort of, you know, what if, small number, small proportion, but we need to also be thinking about those. So I don't mean to say we ought not be introducing these technologies until we have figured all of this out. And of course, we can reprogram and update and rethink our decisions. That's the lucky thing. And over the air, change the programming in the cars, if that's what we decide as a community ought to happen. But I think the technology offers unbelievably important gains in safety and mobility and all the things that we just heard about.
Dr. Jeffrey Kahn joins us here on Midday from time to time to talk about issues in bioethics. He's the director of the Johns Hopkins Berman Institute of Bioethics, and we've got a link to the Berman Institute on our website, wypr.org/midday. Jeff Kahn, always good to see you. We look forward to the next time.
Me too. Thanks.
And I am sorry that I wasn't able to get to all the emails and phone calls that we had on this topic that clearly has great interest among our listeners, and we will do our best to get to some other topics as well the next time we see it. By the way, coming up, Thursdays are for thespians here on Midday. Theater critic Jay Wynn Russick has her weekly theater review coming right up. I'm Tom Hall. Stay with us.
You're listening to Midday here on your NPR News Station, 88.1 WYPR.